This week on Potlatch, an interview by Levi Lott with three state-operated schools coordinators about their jobs and reports on climbing Mount McKinley and on renaming it.
Potlatch, a program about Alaska Natives for Alaska Natives.
To begin Potlatch this week, SOS Tanana Region Coordinator Ida Hildebrand tells Levi Lott what her responsibilities are.
To assist the local people in their programs and in the decisions and programs they themselves have designed.
What type of programs does local people want?
Most of the programs are bicultural or bilingual, more bicultural than bilingual. Bilingual is also covered under the bilingual program by Alaska State Operated Schools. And on bicultural, it varies from sled making, snowshoe making, fishnet making, native sewing that involves beadwork, skin sewing, making boots, parkas, native style cooking, camping, trapping, whatever the native culture did in times past or even today. Besides bicultural, bilingual, there's an assortment of other programs, and that covers anything that the parents feel is an educational need for their children. And it involves anything and just about everything, including field trips. Most of them in my area have been within the state, and there's one I know of that has been out of state. And the educational needs are defined by the parents or the parent committee, and they write a program to cover these needs. And the needs are drawn in a needs assessment by the parents, teachers, and secondary students.
Baskets overflowing flowers, you filled my heart with love. Tender, tender, tender as the morning light that only lovers ever notice. And my shirt is filled with little birds. I'm painting lions on. Forever.
My name is Ralph Luska. I'm originally from Kodiak Island, Akyak. I went to school at Mount Edgecombe and graduated with a BA in elementary education from Fort Lewis College. I'm presently working as the Indian Education at Large Field Coordinator, and I cover the Upper Rail Belt area, Fort Yukon area, and the Delta Greeley Tok area. That large area is the Upper Rail Belt SOS region, the Fort Yukon region, and the Delta Greeley Tok region. Those, those are three SOS regions which weren't assigned a Indian education coordinator that lived there locally. So I cover the three regions out of Anchorage. I go out and I meet with the parents and help them and review the Indian Education Act rules and regulations and assist them in developing their Indian Education Act proposals. That's basically my responsibilities as an at-large coordinator.
Are you brown bagging it to work these days? A lot of people are. But do be careful about carrying fried chicken, roast beef, or baked ham. If it's more than 3 hours from the time you pack your lunch until you eat it, and the meat isn't kept either hot or very cold, the main course could become a breeding place for bacteria that causes food poisoning. A survey by the U.S. Department of Agriculture shows that only about half of the American homemakers are even aware that cooked meat can easily become contaminated if left at room temperature for more than a couple or 3 hours. So, if you can't tote an ice chest or some ice in your lunch bag to work this winter and you still want your meat, how about putting your lunch bag out on the windowsill? If it's hot out, maybe the starlings or pigeons will eat it and save you a tummy ache. So, do handle your food with care.
We're still playing the guessing game of looking for public service messages that can serve Alaska's native people. You can help us get rid of some of this guesswork by telling us what kinds of information you find useful. Write to KUAC, Fairbanks, Alaska. While you're at it, you might tell us what you think of comedy recordings, such as this one by Spike Jones and his orchestra, as they perform Carmen in a way the composer Georges Bizet may never have intended.
Hello, music lovers. This is Spike Jones inviting you to come with us to the Opera House for a City Slicker performance of the opera Carmen. The conductor ascends the podium, stamps his foot for attention. And from the basement, he conducts the overture. On Act One, we see the outside of the Seville Bubblegum Factory. The happy bubblegum girls are singing.
We're the girls, yes, we're the girls that make the best bubblegum. Chew our gum, you'll never stop. All day long, you'll pop and pop. You'll blow and blow.
Shh!
Until at last you blow your top.
Carmen enters. She's a beautiful girl who weighs 300 pounds. She is supposed to fill out the role of the soprano. She not only fills it out, she overflows it. Carmen sings of her new sweetheart, Escapillo the Toreador.
I'm in love with a wonderful man.
She's in love with a wonderful man.
And his name is Escapillo.
One is blue and the other is green.
So high that she cracks the record. The record. The record. The record. The record.
And they're off for Act Two.
Carmen sings the well-known vivace pizzicato poco allegro moderato from the third movement of the Andante Allegretto. Exhausted, she returns to her dressing room. While she is resting, the soldiers march into town. We hear the band in the distance. Schmose is in command.
I'm the famous Don Schmose. Army life is good, I say, but oh, how I hate to march.
Somebody soaked his shorts in starch.
Now I'm gonna drill my men, make them march from 8 to 10. I'll make them march till they sweat.
If we do, we're sure to get.
Jose sees Carmen for the first time. She is crying. The tears are running down her ears. You see, her eyes are very far apart. He feels sorry for her and asks her to marry him as he sings. As he sings. I say, as he sings. Now, you bonehead!
Carmen, darling, please marry me. Oh, be my little bumblebee. You're the honey that'll sweeten our lives.
Instead of children, we'll both have hives.
They'll both have hives!
I cannot marry you, my dumb, cause I'm in love with another one. He fights the ball in the arena.
I could do that if I ate farina. Oh, yes, I could.
Oh, no, you couldn't.
Oh, yes, I could.
Oh, no, you couldn't.
Oh, yes, I could.
Oh, no, you couldn't.
Oh, yes, I could.
The Toreador's for me.
Oh, no, that cannot be.
The Toreador's for me.
Oh, no, that cannot be.
She's right, Schmose. The Toreador's for her. The curtain goes up for Act Three. Oops, pulled it up too soon. Anyway, Carmen goes to a gypsy camp to have her fortune told. Band finishes playing, and all the gypsies take off their earmuffs. Carmen finds an old gypsy and asks him to tell her fortune. She wants to know who she's going to marry, Don Schmose or Escapillo.
Oh, gypsy, will you look and see what future is in store for me?
Give me your hand and please be calm, and I will try and read your palm.
Be careful with my palm, I'm ticklish.
does sound odd and quite ridiculous.
Oh, yes, it's true. I'm very ticklish. I'm very, 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 very ticklish.
I see by you soon will. And you'll have. Or maybe even 4 or 5. Then you will. And he'll be. Then what will.
Carmen exits to cure her hiccups, and the curtain comes down. Unfortunately, it misses her. Carmen doesn't know which one to marry, Escapillo or Don Schmose, so she writes a letter on her typewriter to Escapillo the Toreador, telling him of her plan. Takes place in the bullfighting arena. In one corner, we have Escapillo, the Toreador, weighing 240 pounds. In the other corner, Don Schmose, dressed up as the bull, weighing 32 pounds. And there's the bell for the first round.
There's Don Schmose, he's dressed up as a bull. Now Escapillo gives his tail a pull. Escapillo's scared of being gored. So he takes out his sword. He starts to swing and sway at Don Schmose, who's getting pretty bored.
Don Schmose goes back to his dressing room. He decides to double-cross Escapillo by sending in a real bull. But Don Schmose is nearsighted, and instead he sends in a cow. And there's the bell for round two. Escapillo drowns in the milk. He dies a grade A death. Don Schmose wins Carmen. And as the final curtain comes down, they each put a piece of bubble gum in their mouth, and we see them chewing their way off into the distance.
Chew,
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 chew.
My name is Alexei Morris. I'm the IndianNet Regional Coordinator for the Lower Yukon McGrath area. My job description is mainly working with villages with state-operated schools and implementing the Indian Education Act programs in these different villages. And I'll give you a breakdown of some of the programs that have started in some of these villages in the way I'm responsible for 15 villages with 100 Indian Education Act funds to start and implementing the Indian Education Act program. I'll start out with the ANVIC IAA program and the type of program that...
What's IAA program?
Indian Education Act program. And what ANVIC is doing, they're having a program of diamond willow carving, knitting, leatherwork, and videotape viewing. This is the type of program the community felt that they would want for their students at ANVIC. And at Juakpalak, they're taking a trip to Anchorage teaching.
Who are taking the trip to Anchorage?
The teachers and the students. This will be fourth and fifth graders. And they'll also be teaching the techniques of Eskimo dancing, teaching skin snowing, trapping, and survival. This is what Juakpalak wanted for their program under the Indian Education Act program. Community will hire local instructors for the type of program they want. For instance, in beaver trapping, they'd be taking and hiring local people that know how to beaver trap, and they'd take them out in the field for a couple of weeks. We had over $1 million allocated for this year's program, and we're losing a little over $400,000. And my area alone, we're almost working with $100,000, so we're going to lose $50,000 for the lower Yukon McGrath area. And it's specifically going to be the type of programs they'd like to have in their own communities. And I'm working with the lower Yukon McGrath area. I feel that this type of program is quite effective in a lot of villages. They'd like to see more cultural heritage type programs teaching their youngsters the techniques of survival, hunting and trapping, because that's more or less dying away now. As for ANIAC is concerned, they're having a survival technique program, beaver trapping, knitting, crocheting, skin sewing, beadwork, dog sled building, and fish trap building. This is what the community of ANIAC feels in the type of program they'd like to have under Indian Ed.
Double up America, two can ride cheaper than one.
If you drive to work alone, it's costing you twice as much to commute as it should, and that's too much. Cut it in half. Take a friend. Double up America, two can ride cheaper than one.
Double up America, two can ride cheaper than one.
A public service, U.S. Department of Transportation, this station, and the Ad Council.
Thanks to KYUK Bethel, Alaska, for carrying Potlatch. Here's a recording produced years ago by Frank Brink on climbing Mount McKinley.
In the summer of 1947, renowned scientist, explorer, and mountain climber Bradford Washburn conducted famous Operation White Tower, the scientific expedition that required the climbing of America's tallest mountain, 20,300-foot Mount McKinley. Washburn and his crew, which included his wife Barbara, stayed for more than 2 months on the great mountain, making valuable scientific studies. During this time, by means of a portable shortwave transmitter powered by gas generator, he told the world below him of his experience. Here now is a portion of one of the highest broadcasts ever made on Earth, as it was received by radio station KFAR in Fairbanks, Alaska.
This is Bradford Washburn talking from Denali Pass, the highest camp of Operation White Tower, in the lofty cleft between the two peaks of Mount McKinley. There are 13 of us up here on Mount McKinley. And yes, there are also 9 strong sled dogs down there, too, which have been driven by Earl Norris of Anchorage, and who have been almost as important to us as the other fellow members of the party. We've not just plain climbed McKinley. We've lived on it for 2 months.
Washburn's wife, Barbara, the only woman on the expedition, marks up a first for female mountain climbers.
I am the first woman to ever have reached the top of Mount McKinley, and I believe I'm safe in saying I'm the first woman to have ever attempted it. Most of us on the trip have been on the glacier 70 days. We've all been living on melted snow water for 2 months at least.
It is difficult to realize how close to the lowlands is the life-giving atmosphere we breathe.
Up here at 18,000 feet, we have left exactly half
of the Earth's oxygen supply behind us.
Cold has a different meaning at 18,000 feet.
Your body, due to this lack of oxygen, can't resist it anywhere nearly as much as down below. So the 25 or 30 below zero up here seems like 40 or 50 below down below.
Washburn is one of the few people who can tell what it is like to stand on the highest spot on the North American continent.
Well, on the top, we spend about an hour, a little over an hour, almost an hour and a half, as a matter of fact, despite the cold and despite the wind. But the great thing from the top of McKinley is the view. One of the grandest views on Earth. And one of the things that struck me most about that marvelous view from the top was the feeling of being separated from the lower world.
The Alaska Senate and House are working on a resolution to change the name of North America's highest mountain to Denali. Carolyn Dowling interviewed several people in a Fairbanks supermarket, and here are the reactions to the proposed name change.
Well, Mount Denali was the first name, of course. It was named by the Indians, Denali, because that's their area, I believe. I mean, more so than in Eskimo. Well, I don't know why they changed it, I suppose, to honor some great person. But I don't see why they don't stick with the real name. I think it's good enough.
You'd like to see them go back to Denali?
It'd be fine with me.
I don't think it makes the least bit of difference. The mountain will still be there, and everybody will know it's there. I don't think it makes any difference. Who cares?
Well, I don't know. I'm sort of undecided on that. I really don't have any feelings one way or the other. I like Mount McKinley, but I realize the Eskimos know it as Mount Denali, I believe, don't they? I really have always known it as Mount McKinley, but it wouldn't make too much difference to me, I guess.
That's good. Like the guy in the legislature said, what did McKinley do for us? Denali's a native name. I think it'd fit it a lot better.
Oh, I'd just seen it stay Mount McKinley since that's what it is.
I just heard about it a day or so ago, and Denali means the big one, and McKinley, I understand, was named after someone who didn't quite, was he deserving of the honor?
Well, do you think they should change the name?
Well, McKinley is known now. I mean, it would take a while for the rest of the world to realize that it's the same mountain. It would take a little while for people when someone says Mount Denali, that they're talking of Mount McKinley, and we pride ourselves in that it's the largest mountain on this side of the world.
So what do you think of the proposal?
I know. I'm circling the question, aren't I? I don't really know. But Denali seems to be more fitting because interpreted, what it stands for, what it means. And then the slogan of Alaska is, give me men to match my mountains. So I think maybe I would like to see the change.
Potlatch, produced in the studios of KUAC in College in cooperation with KTOO Juneau, KOTZ Kotzebue, and KYUK Bethel, under Title I of the Higher Education Act.